an Osho talk. The great Zen master, Tahui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment, number 23.
So very close. Just because it's so very close, you cannot get this truth out of your own eyes. When you open your eyes, it strikes you. And when you close your eyes, it's not lacking either. When you open your mouth, you speak of it. And when you shut your mouth, it appears by itself. But if you try to receive it by stirring your mind, you've already missed it by 18,000 miles.
It is such a rejoicing to see Tahui coming closer and closer to the reality, to the truth, and to his awakening. Just a step more, and the old Tahui will be no more there, and the new Tahui is naturally going to speak. The language of all the awakened ones without exception. This sutra is one of the most important that we have come across up to now. The greatest difficulty with human mind is that whatever is available from the beginning, it tends to forget it. It takes it for granted. There is no gap between you and your truth, because you are the truth. This is such a tremendous phenomenon, but one goes on missing it for the simple reason. Because every search leads you away from it. Every question misguides you. Every answer is going to be wrong. If truth was separate from you, things would have been very, very easy. If the truth was far away from you, you would have achieved it long before. If truth was difficult, almost impossible, it would have challenged your ego. The ego cannot be challenged by something which is already the case. There is no question of any achievement. If truth was somewhere on the Everest, then thousands of Edmund Hillarys would have started moving towards the Everest. If truth was on the moon, millions would have been attracted. There is an ancient story. God made the world, and in the beginning He used to live in the world, in the marketplace, but His life was becoming a nightmare. Not a single moment of rest. And people were standing the whole day and waking him in the night. They had so many complaints. So many things were wrong. They were bringing new suggestions how things should be changed, how things should be made, about each and everything. The torture became too much, and he inquired his closest angels, what has to be done? These people will kill me. Somebody comes and says that, listen, tomorrow there should be no rain, because I am going fishing. And just after him a woman comes, that I need tomorrow absolutely that the rain should be there, because I have sown the seeds today, and if rain comes tomorrow, they will settle in the soil. Now what I am supposed to do? And this was just an instance. You can conceive the situation of the poor God. He was so fed up with man that he never made anything after he has made man. It is not that his creativity was exhausted with man. He could have created many more things. But man was too much, and he was repenting that why he created this man. Without man, life was peace, silence, trees and animals and birds, they were all joyous, without any fear of death, without any religions, without any philosophies, without any theologies, without any wars. Things were utterly silent, but the moment he created man, he committed his first and last mistake. So he asked now what to do. Somebody suggested you go to the Everest. He said, you don't know. I can see the future. Soon, Tenzing and Edmund Hillary are going to reach there. And if they find me there, then you can be sure roads will be made, airports will be made, buses will be running, trains may be reaching, aeroplanes will be landing, and the same trouble will start there. Somebody said, then it is better you move to the moon. But he said, you cannot see the future. To me, past, future and present are all simultaneously available. Soon they are going to reach there. It is only a question of a small time. And in the eternity of existence, few years, few hundred years don't mean anything. Give me some idea where they will never reach. And an old angel who was listening all the time whispered in his ear, then there is only one place. You start living in man himself. That is the only place he will not bother. He will look for you all around the world, to the far away stars, but he will not look within you. When the first Russian astronaut came back, he was the first man to reach closest to the moon, circulating around it, studying it, bringing photographs from there. The first question was asked to him in Russia was, did you see God there? And he said, I didn't see anybody. There is not even water, there is not even any tree, there is no possibility of anybody being there. Life cannot exist. The air is so thin. Oxygen is 1/8 than it is on the earth. So I don't see there is any possibility. God is not there. This man was Yuri Gagarin, and they have made a museum in Moscow in the memory of Yuri Gagarin, the first man who came closest to the moon. And on the top of the museum they have written, we have searched everywhere, even we have looked in the moon, God is not there. Perhaps the old angel was right. They will look for you everywhere. Just start living in the very innermost core of man himself. And since then he has been at peace. Of course, since then you have not been in peace. Because even complaining gives a great relief. Now there is nobody to complain. People are still doing in the churches, in the synagogues, in the temples, the same nagging device they call prayer. They are still suggesting, do it this way. Don't do it that way. In the Second World War, Germany was praying, the victory has to be to the Germans. And England was praying, the victory has to be to the English. But now all these prayers disappear into the empty sky. There is nobody to hear them. Two generals after the Second World War, one English and one German, were talking in a restaurant in Paris that what went wrong. 5 years we were continuously winning, and then suddenly came the collapse. The English general smiled and he said, my friend, you don't understand. War is not our. We were praying to God continuously. Our armies were praying to God before they started moving. Every morning. The German said, do you think we were doing otherwise? We were also praying all the time. The English general laughed and he said, what was the language you were praying? He said, obviously it was German. He said, now, the point is clear. God does not understand German. He understands only English. Although he has disappeared within you, you are looking at the sky. It is empty, infinitely empty, and you are praying to God. And you will not look even for a single moment within yourself. The attraction for the far away is tremendous. It challenges your ego. It will make you the greatest man, the first man who reached the Everest, the first man who walked on the moon, the first man who walked on the Mars. And I don't see any point in it. What is the point in it? First or second or third? A man is standing on the Mars for a few minutes, just looks stupid. But people are trying to reach to the stars. The far away has a tremendous magnetic force, particularly for the ego, because it gives you the promise of great achievement. The psychology of the ego is confined in the word achievement. Achieve something. And the truth is already there within you. You cannot achieve it. You cannot lose it. Because it is your very being. That's why millions of people never become interested in it. What is the point? Neither you can lose it, nor you can attain it. It is already there. And down the ages, slowly, it has become taken for granted that there is nothing to be found inside. And it is true, there is nothing to be found nothing to be achieved, because your inside is already having the whole kingdom of God. You cannot add anything to it, and you cannot take anything away. But your ego is driving you crazy, taking you to all the corners of the world. The ego is not interested in what you already have, because that will not be a great achievement. Kahui Sutra is just because it is so very close. You cannot get this truth out of your own eyes. Even to say it is very close is not right. It is you. Closeness also is a little distance. When you want to see things, you need a certain perspective. If you put your mirror just on your nose, you will not see anything. You have to keep it a little away from you, then you can see your face. But the truth is closer than anything in fact, the word closer gives the idea of distance. That's why I say he is just one step away, one step more, and he will disappear. Truth is you. He has almost reached the end of his pilgrimage. Just because it is so very close, you cannot get this truth out of your own eyes. When you open your eyes, it strikes you. And when you close your eyes, it is not licking either. When you open your eyes, it is really the truth opening its eyes. And when you close your eyes, it is the truth that is closing its eyes. One who has realized knows that the seeker himself is the search, and that is the trouble. The pilgrim is himself the goal of pilgrimage. There is a Sufi story about Al-Hallaj. He was a poor man, but very sincere in his search. And in Mohammedans it is thought that if you go to their holy place, Kaaba, just once in a lifetime, that's enough for your liberation. So he collected money, sold his house, his land, whatsoever is small he had, and the village gave him a good send-off. But just outside the village, under a tree was sitting a great master, Junaid. Al-Hillaj has no idea who he is. But Junaid said, "Listen, where are you going?" He said, "I wanted to ask you which way I should go. I am going to Kaaba." Al-Hillaj looked at the man more carefully. He was so radiant. He was not an ordinary man. Junaid said, "Forget all about Kaaba. I am here. Just take 7 rounds around me, the way you will be taking if you reach Kaaba." And put all your money in front of me. Don't waste it. And the man was so authoritative. The poor Al-Hillaj gave him his whole money, took 7 rounds, and Junaid said, "I have found the truth within myself. In Kaaba there is only a stone. I am a living truth. Your pilgrimage is fulfilled. But just one step more. Al-Hillaj asked, "What is that step?" He said, "The step is when you start taking round around yourself. Still, my truth is my truth. You will be blessed. You will feel great ecstatic moments, but still it is my truth. You should learn to go around yourself." Al-Hillaj said, "That seems to be a very difficult job. How one can go around oneself? And Junnet said, just will. In the same place, will 7 times. And wherever you are, is the truth. Al-Hillaz never left Junnet. He said, now give me place in your feet. I am feeling so fulfilled and contented. I don't know why. So relaxed. I don't know why. I have never been in such a beautiful space. Just allow me to sit by your feet. And Al-Hillaz proved to be the greatest disciple of Junnet. So great that he became a master in his own authority. And today the situation is Junnet is remembered only because of Al-Hillaz. Otherwise, Junnet would have been forgotten. Al-Hillaz was crucified because he declared Anal Haq, I am the truth. That was his crime. But that is the reality. But no religion wants you to know the reality, because their whole business will go bankrupt. Then who is going to bother about holy scriptures? And who is going to bother about churches and organizations, Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, Jews? Who is going to bother? If you have found your truth within yourself, there is nothing more in this whole existence to find. Truth is functioning through you. When you open your eyes, it is truth opening his eyes. When you close your eyes, it is truth who is closing its eyes. This is a tremendous meditation. If you can simply understand the device, you don't have to do anything. Whatever you are doing is being done by truth. You are walking, it is truth. You are sleeping, it is truth resting. You are speaking, it is truth speaking. You are silent, it is truth silent. It is one of the most simple meditation techniques. Slowly, slowly, everything settles by this simple formula. And then there is no need for the technique. You are cured, you throw the meditation. You throw the medicine. Then you live as truth, alive, radiant, contented, blissful, a song unto yourself. Your whole life becomes a prayer without any words. Better to say, a prayerfulness, a grace, a beauty, which does not belong to our mundane world. A ray of light coming from the beyond into the darkness of our world. When you open your mouth, you speak of it. And when you shut your mouth, it appears by itself. Even the mystics who have chosen to remain silent have been heard. People have reached to them. Their silence was as loud, perhaps more loud than their words could have been. Even if they were living in the deserts or in the mountains, people have trekked and reached to them. Something invisible joins us all into one network, and whenever some point becomes luminous, suddenly the whole network feels the thrill. Those who are more sensitive feel more. Those who are less sensitive feel less. Those who are intellectuals feel it, but interpret it in such a way that they miss the point. Have you seen the spider's web? Just touches from any place, and the whole web will feel your touch. Every fiber in it will be vibrating. Otherwise, it would have been almost impossible to find the silent mystic. Tahui is right, even when your mouth is shut, it speaks. Whether you want anybody to hear you or not, people from far away places will start traveling towards you. The story in Jesus' life that when he was born, three wise men from the east traveled to Judea to pay their respects to the newly born baby. It is said, in fact, that's how Jesus got his name. Because when the first wise man entered into the stable where Jesus was born, the door was small. It was made for donkeys, not for men. He struck his head against the door and said, "Jesus." And Mary said to Joseph that this seems to be a very good name for the boy. The story is mythological because it says a star led the way and guided them. Otherwise, how they were going to find where this small child is? And they were old and they could not wait. And they traveled thousands of miles. They were waiting, and a star led their way, and it stopped exactly over the stable. This is mythological or perhaps a poetic way of saying. But it has some truth in it. It is not just a fabrication of a beautiful story. First, all the three wise men come from the east. Perhaps the west was not able to be so sensitive to understand Jesus, and that too when he is just a baby. And they did not understand him even when he was 33. Then they crucified him. And they have not understood him even today. They worship him, but that worship is just a sociality. Half of the world is Christian, but that is simply politics. It is significant that all the three old men came from the east. And I can understand the light was not of a star shining ahead of them and leading them to the place. The East has its own explanations which Christians have never been able to understand. The light was these three wise old men's own third eye. It is also called the star. It led them to the right direction. Stars don't move that way. Stars go round and round. They cannot go straight. And stars are far away. Even if they stop exactly on the stable, you will not be able to figure out where the stable is. Because that star is so far away that the stable can be anywhere on the earth. Christians have not been able to explain what this star is. They have taken it literally, that really a star guided their way. And they don't understand the stars are very big. Our sun is a mediocre star. It is 6,000 times bigger than the earth, but still it is a mediocre category. There are stars in comparison to them. This sun is just non-existential. But even this sun cannot lead. If it comes too close to you, it will burn the whole earth. It has to remain as far as it is. And those stars are miles light years away. Certainly it is not the star at all, but it is the star that shines in your third eye, between your two eyebrows, and fills your whole being with light. That has a magnetic pull towards a man who is going to become enlightened someday, or maybe who is already enlightened. The same is the story about Gautama Buddha, a great saint. Came from the Himalayas. He has not come to the world for 50 years. But his death was approaching close, and Buddha was born. And there was no messenger to inform him. Nobody knew that this man is going to be a Buddha. But the old man had an absolute certainty. And the same star was guiding him too. He rushed fast because he was not certain that he will be able to reach in time. He may die before him, before reaching. But he reached, and he was known all over the country as one of the most wise men, the father of Gautama Buddha touched his feet and he said, "Why you have troubled? The journey is tedious. You could have simply sent a message. I would have come. What is the reason?" He said, "No, I had to come. I want to see the baby that is born in your house." The father could not believe, but the man was so respected, he could not even question him why. He thought perhaps he wants to bless the baby. So the baby was brought, and the old man with tears of joy touched the feet of the small baby. The father said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I will not be here when he will become enlightened. My days are finished." But he will become a great enlightened being. At least I will have the satisfaction to touch his face. And I am the first man, at least, to touch his feet. Millions will touch. Millions will gather around him. But I am the first to recognize him, to see him. You can see only the baby. I can see his inner light. Because I can see my own inner light. Once you see your own inner light, you start seeing lights wherever it exists. Then time and space are no more barriers. But if you try to receive it by stirring your mind, you have already missed it by 18,000 miles. The truth that is within you, the truth that you are, cannot be found by your mind. Mind is a very low faculty. The higher can see the lower, but the lower cannot see the higher. Mind's function is to know the objective world, and it is perfectly a good mechanism for it. But it has no ways to look within itself, to look beyond itself. It simply has no faculties to perform that act. It is just a mechanical device developed through millions of years of evolution. But not a single man in the whole history has been able to say that I recognize my truth through my mind. Those who have recognized it have recognized when the mind was completely silent, non-functioning, no stirring of thoughts, as if the mind was put aside. Mind is not a ladder to your being. It is a wall. It is not a bridge. essential religiousness consists of only one thing, the transcendence from the mind. And immediately, all the doors of your innermost being start opening on their own accord. And all the mysteries of life and existence become available to you. Once this truth is recognized, known, you can use the mind. Just as a trained vehicle to express in a fragmentary way but something it can express. Although those words are not absolutely correct, they cannot be. They were not made for it. But they can indicate. At least they can give you a few hints. There have been two types of saints, sages. One I have told you are the arhatas. They remain silent. Sensitive people have to reach to them. And bodhisattvas, they make every effort to reach to the sensitive people. There is no way to say who is doing better. They are simply following their own inner light. Nobody is higher than the other. The world is so strange that sometimes if truth comes to your door and knocks, his very coming to your door may become a barrier. The vice versa is also true. When you go for search and you knock at the door of truth, and everything remains silent, perhaps you may be more receptive to the silence. To his presence than to a bodhisattva who runs after you, who tries every effort to approach as many people as possible. But both have help in their own unique ways. You have the capacity just you are not aware of it. The most costly and the most famous diamond is Kohinoor. The word Kohinoor means the light of the world. It has been presented to the British king of that time by a Sikh king of Punjab, Ranjit Singh. Just as a friendly gesture, it is still in the crown of the British Queen. But it is such an unique piece that it is not used. It is being kept into the museum for people to see. This Kohinoor has a tremendous story behind it. It was found near Hyderabad, in the state of Hyderabad, in a small village called Golconda. A poor man had a small field by the side of a small river in Golconda. And just one day, he found this Kohinoor. It was 3 times bigger than it is now, because so much cutting and polishing has gone on it that 1/3 has remained, 2/3 has been removed. It was shining in the sand of the river. He thought it will be good for children to play with. So he brought Kohinoor, and his children were playing with it. Just by coincidence, a wandering sannyasin reached Golconda. And asked this poor man shelter for the night. The poor man was immensely happy. Although he was to give his own food to him, and he will have to remain hungry, but it is a great blessing that a man who has left everything for the search of truth has knocked on his door. When he has eaten the food and they were going to sleep, they started talking. And the wandering sannyasin was a source of great information, because he was wandering from one corner to the another corner of the country. He said to the poor man that, looking at your things, your small hut, your torn clothes, I feel sad. I know places. If you sell your land here and your house for the same price, you can find at least 4 times bigger land and then your life will be more rich. So the man sold everything, but the children carried their toy, the Kohinoor. And just when he was on the way, some jeweler saw those children carrying such a big diamond, their breaths stopped. They could not believe. They had never conceived that such a big diamond can be in existence. They asked him the price. He said, there is no question of price. It is just a toy to my children. Whatever you feel like giving, you can give and you can take it. But the children were reluctant. They won't give it. So finally the poor man said, we don't have anything, just that toy the children have. Don't disturb them. He moved, but by the time he reached to the place, the prices of things had changed. It was years before that the sannyasin had seen that the prices are very low in that part of country. So rather than settling there, he came back home. And the Nizam of Hyderabad, the king of the Hyderabad state, heard about this diamond that those children used to play. He inquired and he was informed that it is the best diamond in the whole world, of the finest quality, the finest water, without any flaw. You can purchase it at any price, and still it will be cheap. So the king purchased it, gave him few thousand gold coins, and the poor man was very happy. And he purchased also his field, because where Kohinoor was found, there must be other diamonds in that part of the field. And his field became one of the greatest mines for diamonds. Golconda and the field of that poor man and that small river has given almost all the famous diamonds of the world. and thousands and the poor man had possessed that land for centuries, generation after generation, but was not aware. You also have the Kohinoor from the very beginning of eternity, but you are not a jeweler. You cannot appraise what you are carrying within yourself. A Gautam Buddha is nothing but a jeweler who can see immediately inside you that you are carrying a tremendously valuable Kohinoor. But if you start searching for it through the mind, you will miss. It can be found only when mind is completely silenced. That's what meditation is all about. Silence the mind, whatever method you follow is immaterial. Silence the mind. And you are for a great surprise, perhaps the greatest surprise, because there is nothing greater than that. You will find your truth. You will find your home. You will find your eternity. You will find everything that you have been dreaming, desiring, and feeling frustrated and miserable because that which you were asking was within you and you were looking everywhere else. Tahui is right, but if you try to receive it by stirring your mind, you are already missed it by 18,000 miles. Just a small stirring of the mind and you are far away from yourself. No stirring of the mind and you are exactly where you need to be. Just become aware of your tremendous treasure. Religion is not to make you poor. Religion is to make you the richest man in the world. But your riches will not be of the mundane. They will be of the sacred. They will be of the divine. Blessed are those who are capable to know themselves. Because except this, life remains a hell. And there is no way out. Jhapal Sartre has a small book very beautiful. It is a description of hell. The name of the book is No Exit. There is not old type of tortures, hell, fire, etc., nothing. All comforts, centrally air conditioned, everything that they need is available, just only problem is there is no exit. So they are stuck in a place, centrally air conditioned. All kinds of strangers, nowhere to go, nothing to do, everything is supplied without even asking. Just you desire and you get it. This used to be the description of heaven, that just you desire and you have it. But there is no exit, so it is an air-conditioned nightmare. You cannot go out. Everybody is sitting on a beautiful sofa, but just sitting there. And people are getting fed up with each other for no reason. Just continuously, in the eyes of everybody, no privacy. And the problem continuously, that now what is going to happen because we cannot get out. Without knowing exactly that what he has described as an air-conditioned nightmare, because there is no exit. He is describing about your mind. You are also enclosed in your mind with all kinds of dreams, imaginations, projections, ideologies, but no way to get out. Meditation is not a way to get out of the mind. Meditation says just watch the mind and you are out. In fact, you have always been out. Your being inside the mind is your fallacious idea. Once you stop the mind functioning, suddenly the fallacious idea will disappear. And you will find you are out in the open. And the whole sky is available to you. Your freedom, your eternal life, and this vast, beautiful existence, always available to you. to shower you with all kinds of blessings. Just a small trick. It is not really even a technique, just a trick. You are not in the mind, but you have been thinking yourself that you are in the mind. That is your trouble. You must remember some nightmare. That will explain you how this great nightmare is going on. In a nightmare, you want to open your eyes and you cannot. You want to move your hands and you cannot. No exit. And the nightmare becomes so intense, perhaps a lion is standing on your chest. Or you are being thrown from a mountain into an abysmal darkness, and you can't even see the bottom of it. When it comes to its absolute intensity, the very intensity wakes you up. You cannot manage to wake yourself up. If the nightmare is of a mild quality, you cannot come out of it. But if it is very intense, then that very intensity wakes you up. And suddenly there is no nightmare. You have never been under the paws of a lion, and you were not being thrown from any mountain. You were not being crushed by a bulldozer. Nothing was happening, it was only a dream. But you were thinking you are in it, you were not in it. Even when it was happening, you were out of it. It was only a film going on in front of you. You were out of it. The three-dimensional films did not succeed in the market. Perhaps only one or two films were made, because the working and making of them was too costly, too arduous. They did not succeed. Someday a better technology is bound to bring them back. But I have seen the first and I was amazed about one thing. Because the film is three-dimensional, people are just as people are. A man comes running on his horse, and the whole movie house gives way. People of the house half rush to this side, the other half rush to other side. Because the horse is coming inside the movie hall. being three-dimensional, it looks exactly like a horse. A man throws a certain weapon and everybody saves his head, because that weapon comes as if it will come out, and everybody knows that it is a movie. And everybody laughs afterwards when he has done his act, knows completely well that it is a movie and we are out of it. Nothing can come out of the movie. It may be three-dimensional. But for the moment, when the horse comes running so fast, you forget all about the movie. The first question is to survive your life. You are out of it. The mind is only your belief that you are in it. This belief has to be broken. And the way to break this belief, I have been telling you, is very simple. Just watch. And just by watching, you are suddenly out of it. Because the watcher cannot be inside. He has to stand out and look at the whole thing. And the moment you are identified with the watcher, which is your real identity, the mind loses all its grip on you. Mind no more stirring, you have arrived to the truth. This small sutra is very significant. Perhaps it may be that when Tahui realized not through his intellectual acumen, but through his meditation, the existential truth, he spoke this sutra. This may be the turning point from the intellectual into an enlightened being.